nigger. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got a year. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I'm a little logy today. I just had leftovers.
Do you have a Barca lounger in here?
You gonna nap on us here today? Want me to put a football game on?
No, I'm good. No football, unless you're talking about that World Cup, maybe.
That kind of football.
That foosball. But so
I like all the teams that tried to like sneak rainbows into their team pictures and stuff.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that. those folks are bad over there. Hey, you know, it's we forget about this. We forget about this in the United States. We really, really do. I mean, Western countries have come a long way on issues of gender diversity and you know, who you love and so on. But there's a lot of countries. I knew a student, it was a graduate student a few years ago, who came from a country by the name of Mauritania. Knowing our listeners, I'm sure there are many people know what Mauritania is, but it's the death penalty there for being gay. And I mean, he came to the United States because he was a refugee. I mean, they will kill me legally for who I am. So that we have to remind ourselves every now and then that when things are bad and when we feel like, you know, we couldn't get much crummier in this country, there's a lot of good things. And that right there is one of them. Not to say there's not people in this country that have problems with it, but at least nobody's being, you know, at least legally, things like that don't happen here. But yeah, I'm not into the World Cup as much this time. In the past, we've been kind of excited about it.
Yeah, I thought you were.
But this time, I'm just, I don't know, just kind of like, whatever.
Just a bunch of guys playing with balls.
Yeah.
That was one thing one of my old neighbors said a long time ago. He was like a big Packer fan.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, I noticed him, like, it was like Sunday afternoon during a Packer game. He was out putzing around in his yard or something. And so I said, well, what's going on? I thought you're a big Packer fan. He goes, you know, it finally dawned on me. They're just a bunch of guys playing with a ball.
Yeah, but there's nothing like the excitement of a soccer game where, you know,
Nothing happens for 70
nil, nil.
Minutes.
Yeah, right. Hey, it's another nil-nil game. All right. Great. Wonderful.
My favorite Twitter follow, which probably I won't be able to say much longer, but it's a woman who calls herself the Volatile Mermaid.
Okay.
And then she antagonizes men a lot of times with her takes.
Easy to do.
And she said, I don't watch the World Cup. If I wanted to interact with a bunch of guys who can't score, I'd talk to the people who comment on my post.
Well, there were a couple of there were some games. I mean, it was the one that I remember that was the historically or politically the big one for me was Spain versus the Netherlands, which was 2010. And that was a big deal because very few people know this, but because of the weird dynastic politics of Europe in the late Middle Ages, the Netherlands was actually a possession of the Spanish crown at one point, and it only became a separate country because they launched a war of independence against Spain, and that's how they became a separate nation. And I was kind of hoping, like, I hope that the Netherlands beats them again. Because, Mel, you know me, things from the 1500s still get me upset.
No one holds a grudge like you do.
Yeah, exactly. But the Spanish beat them, and I felt really bad about it. There was another game we went to one time. It was, God, what year was that? It must have been 2006. It was France versus Italy. And it was so funny. We went to a local restaurant where they were playing the game. And, of course, Companion and I were for France. And it was notable that all the people from Italy all looked like they were in the from the frats or sororities, you know, just from their general appearance and nice teeth and the fact they kept calling each other Skip and Heather and things like that. But
the sweater tied around their neck.
Yeah, exactly. But the French lost, unfortunately. But I remember somebody saying, "Well, why do you guys for France?" And I said, "Because their team is filled with North Africans and homosexuals and communists. Because what is there to be against?
Smoke a pack during every half. Like, you know?
What could you possibly find to go wrong there?" So, anyway.
Well, that's what you know, spectator sports is. It's essentially kind of like warfare. I mean, you know, our young warriors against your young warriors. Sure. And
don't have submachine guns.
Yeah, it's just evolved a little bit from when they had, you know.
Well, that's where they had, I mean, that was the Olympics, right? The Olympics where the Greek states were constantly kicking the tar out of each other. And it's like, well, let's do something where we just, like, involves the discus or something. You know? Something that's not pointy, you know.
Running,
yeah. Running, yeah.
Let's run. Who can run away from the other guy faster?
Yeah, that would be a good thing to learn how to do. Yeah.
Oh, so did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Well, we've had some difficulty in the home because Companion was unwell, and he actually had to be hospitalized for a few days. Knowing again our demographic, AFib, you all know what that is, I'm sure, and unfortunately he's a little suffered from that, and this time
AFib, that's what happens when Trump opens his mouth.
I wish it was just AFib. it's an architecture of lies rivaling a medieval cathedral. It's atrial fibrillation, and it's when the electrical pulses to your heart are kind of off.
Yeah.
And he's had this for a couple years now, but this time it normally responds right away to a little medication, and this time it took a few days, and they were worried, and I was worried too. So, but once that was...
Did you get the horse dewormer?
Do you know what's funny? They gave him everything you can imagine, and it's still jumping all over the place. And then the doctors made the brainiac decision. Let's take him off of everything and see what happens. And then, of course, he got well. he's having an appointment with his cardiologist on Tuesday, and I'm hoping that all they talk about is the weather, you know? so he doesn't diagnose or prescribe anything, you know?
Have some decaf.
Decaf, well, that's good. I mean, they don't really know what kind of causes it, but there are triggers. I mean, caffeine can be for some people. The big one is alcohol, though. Alcohol
really?
Apparently messes with your electrical signals a little bit and can cause problems. But that's, again, it's a trigger. It's not the cause, exactly. It's something that can exacerebate a condition
it's
you already have.
It's the fuse.
Yeah, it's the fuse, exactly. So that was unpleasant, but then... But then I got through it, and we had Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving was nice. So
good.
We had ham, and I know you're a vegetarian, but we are meat eaters. But I thought, you know, I don't want to have a turkey.
Yeah.
And so we went back and forth on turkey or ham, turkey or ham. But of course, because he'd been in the hospital, we ended up at the grocery store like the day before Thanksgiving. And guess what? The only thing that was there was ham. So either that or you could get like a 20-pound... You know, like a big bird.
Yeah.
And it's only going to be Companion and me and Companion's mother.
Plus, it takes like 6 hours to bake.
Well, yeah. I mean, that would have been problematic in and of itself. But I realized that we live on the Isthmus, okay? And most of the people in the Isthmus are young adults or retired people. I mean, the demographic's changing, but that's the bulk of the people that go to the supermarket that we go to.
And matching dogs.
And with their double dogs, yes. Sometimes they get three dogs that are identical. I call that the troika.
What's the name of the three-headed dog in mythology?
Oh, Cerberus.
Cerberus,
yeah.
That's
exactly.
It,
yeah. Exactly, yeah. You're not getting in hell that easily, and you're certainly not getting out.
Sometimes they just clone the dogs now. I mean, instead of just...
I've heard of that.
Instead of just, like, breeding them.
And I'm floored by that kind of... It's a vision of the apocalypse, as far as I'm concerned. But but I think all the mid-sized turkeys got taken because people have smaller units that they're feeding, and just like with us. So we ended up getting ham, and so we're going to get turkey for Christmas, I guess.
Okay.
That'll be the deal we made.
Very good. So we were driving to meet some, you know, eat with some friends and family and stuff, and we were... kind of on the outskirts of Sun Prairie, and then there was this big field, and it was full of wild turkeys.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about turkeys, I was reading this, is that wild turkeys are now, I mean, they were going away for a while, and now they're coming back with a vengeance. And I see wild turkeys frequently where I work, because it's right by one of one of our lakes here in town. And you'll see little troops of them. There's about, you know, there'll be about 9 or 10 of them all walking together. And if they get used to humans, apparently, they're more aggressive when they're used to humans. And the reason why is because they're very hierarchical birds. And the Tom will try to make you part of the structure, basically. And the way to do that is to intimidate.
Yeah.
And I was reading this story that apparently, I think it was in Massachusetts, like the Massachusetts Department of Environment or something,
story,
was saying, oh, yeah, well, if it tries to, you know, if it basically tried to subordinate you, you know, push back, like fight back. I was like, really? That's what you're telling people to do? And then like a week later, they rescinded it, you know. It's like, okay, don't fight with the turkeys for dominance, okay? So
MMA rules, where, you know, it's like anything goes. Yeah, it's like, yeah, they're pretty aggressive birds. They're pretty badass birds.
Yeah.
So. One time I was biking over by Verona, and this wasn't a turkey, but it was like one of those big cranes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was standing right in the middle of the bike path, and, and it was determined that it wasn't going to move. It, it wanted me to go around it and, you know, and be the subordinate, be the beta.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Which I did, of course.
It just comes naturally sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
My favorite story like that was, we were visiting my aunt in Columbus, Ohio. And we were staying at this one hotel, and there was a tourist bus that was coming in. I think they were going to the OSU game or something. And the bus came into the parking lot, and there was a goose there, a gander. And that gander was just not having any of it. And it walked up to the bus. It stood in front of the bus with, you know, its legs athwart, right? And it just honked at it, like, you know, you back off. And you could see everybody in the bus was laughing.
Like Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, it was, like, it was amazing. And the bus driver, to his credit, you know, he backed the bus up.
Yeah.
And you could just, I was looking at that goose and I thought, that thing is so proud of itself. Look what I did. You know?
It goes back to the goose lodge.
Walking,
you
know?
I stood down a bus today.
It definitely had a spring in its step after that.
Well, traditionally, the day after Thanksgiving, we do kind of a light show. We don't get into a lot of...
Oh, okay. Heavy, is that what we're doing right now?
Yeah.
It kind of feels that way.
Yeah, it does. We've killed 12 minutes already. So.
Yeah.
But we don't do a lot, like a lot of ranting or heavy politics.
No.
Or anything. But I did read that Donald Trump, and this sounds made up, but I think it actually happened. Donald Trump and Kanye West had dinner together.
Oh, yeah.
And things did not go well.
Oh, really?
Kanye, who's running for president again, by the way. So Trump doesn't like that to begin with.
Right, right.
You know, I'm running for president. Nobody else should run for president.
Sure, yeah.
And and then Kanye said, well, how about if we run together and you could be the vice president on the ticket?
So, a little bit like that turkey. Gobble, gobble. Yeah, well, Trump's not going to want to be the beta, so we know that right away.
You mean like Mike Pence?
Yeah, right. So it didn't go well.
I don't think it went well. I didn't read any details.
I do have some. I have some good news on the Trump front. I don't know if you saw this.
What's that?
Prosecutors in Manhattan rested their case this week in the tax fraud trial of Donald J. Trump. In fact, they rested the case on Monday of this week, and they without calling a witness that they'd previously planned to. Part of the reason why was that the CFO of the Trump Organization was there, Alan Weisselberg.
He was singing like a canary.
Yeah, he was. He pleaded guilty to his role in the scheme, this tax scheme that the company was engaged in, and he said on cross-examination that he had not conspired with any Trump relative and acted solely on himself, for himself, which may have helped the defense, but they thought that the testimony gave enough information about what was going on there, despite his saying, his avowals of not hurting anybody. He gave enough inside information that they feel like they're getting pretty good info. So they've rested their case, and the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, so this coming, this will be, what, November 28th, they'll resume the trial. And the trial concerns a scheme in which Mr. Weisselberg and other Trump org executives receive some compensation in off-the-book perks, including, and you can just see it, apartment rentals, luxury cars, private school tuition for relatives. Company has been charged with 17 counts of tax fraud, conspiracy, scheme to defraud, and falsification of business records. Or, as they say in Trump world, another day.
And why has he fought for 7 years to keep his tax returns?
Well, that was the other thing. The Supreme Court said, no, we're not stepping in on
this. It was unanimous, too. Yeah. Even Clarence didn't go along with it.
Yeah.
Clarence
and
Jeannie.
Yeah. Well, I like that they're as much sharks as he is. You know, you put me in a position of power, screw you.
What's in it?
I don't have to do what you say. I got a lifetime job.
I'm on break.
Takes a shark to know a shark.
Well, plus his support is kind of fading, apparently, on the right. So
yeah, because he didn't
deliver the goods.
He didn't deliver. So, yeah, so. That stock is
value.
So
you have no value to us anymore.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, they'll get excited about him again if it turns out that he's got a residuum of cult followers who put the pressure on the elites. That's the way these things usually
work. Well, I mean, remember, you know, when W. Bush started the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War.
He had to do that.
He had to do that. Because Saddam Hussein, 9/11.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Yeah.
Not that I'm saying they're connected, but Saddam Hussein, 9/11.
9/11, we had to do something.
Invade some country.
I mean, we either were going to send him a dozen roses or we're going to invade the country. I don't know which one it was going to be.
9/11, Saddam Hussein. Yep. Cheney was good at that. Yeah, you know, just kind of blend them
just
together.
Slide right in there, yep.
But I mean, you know, like 90% of the country thought it was a swell idea at the time. And then, like, you know, 4 or 5 years later when it wasn't going so well, it's like, well, who came up with this stupid idea?
Nothing fails like failure.
How many fathers does failure have? Here's a story you'll like. A team of researchers have cracked a 5-century-old code that reveals a rumored French plot to kill Charles V.
Oh.
Charles was the Holy Roman Emperor
and
King of Spain.
Yep.
And one of the most powerful men of the 16th century.
He was a Habsburg.
And he reigned for more than 40 years. It took a team from the Loria Research Lab in eastern France 6 months to decipher a letter he wrote in 1547 by the emperor to his ambassador in France. This period saw a succession of wars and tensions between Spain and France, but this letter was in code, and it had been languished for centuries in the collections in a library, and this cryptographer first heard about its existence a couple years ago, about 3 years ago, and was finally able to find it in 2021, and it had the signature of Charles V, but it was utterly incomprehensible.
Mm.
She said that it was in some really strange code but it took them. They finally cracked the code, and he was very concerned about assassination plots and he was concerned about the degradation of the state of relations between France and Spain, and he was just it was not a happy picture they painted.
Plus, could you pick up a quart of milk?
Yeah, but I just thought it was cool. He wrote it in code, and they couldn't crack it.
That's great.
For you.
Yeah, I love it.
500 years.
When I was in high school, I got a book from my aunt, which was ancient languages that nobody can decipher.
Oh, cool.
I loved that. And then they were talking about why it was like different ones, like Etruscan, you know, like why is it hard to decipher? Well, we have no idea. I mean, this was a civilization that basically the Romans tried as hard as they could to wipe out, you know, so it's like there's no way we can figure this stuff out. I mean, that was like when they found the Rosetta Stone. I mean, nobody knew what any of that Egyptian stuff was. It was just, you know, snake,
bird,
crazy
canary.
Lady. Yeah, right, exactly. What's all that about?
Language is weird when you really think about it. I mean, that you know, you're a baby and you can't really talk. You don't have any language. Yeah. And then just by being around you pick up stuff.
Yep.
But we've got, I mean, thousands of languages have evolved. Right. We found thousands of different ways to communicate.
Right.
And, you know, just based on geography mostly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting because there's probably an absolute limit in design space on what languages you can produce with your mouth. I mean, there's probably certain things you can't do with it. But yeah, within the range of what you can do with your mouth and your larynx and, you know, air and stuff, we've pretty much covered a lot of ground. I was reading this week that this was kind of pleasing to me. You know, so many languages keep disappearing, and it's, you know, you get down to like 5 or 6, you know, speakers and so on. There's a language, a Celtic language in the British Isles called Manx, which is, there's a little island called the Isle of Man, and they have their own special language, their own version of Celtic. And apparently it's resurging. I saw this and I thought, oh, goody. I mean, you know, it'd be nice if we had that with some of the indigenous North American languages and things like that. But still, it's nice to see a small language with very few, you know, native users. And it's like, I think they've said like 3,000 people speak it or something.
Oh, that's
so, you know, so, and so basically it's starting to get a little upturn. Yeah. And as part of it is just being stubborn. You know, people are like, oh, you know, back in the 19th century, that's the rustic language the dumb people speak.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Very much more class-bound society. And now they're kind of like, hey, how dare you people tell us how to speak? I mean, it's
good for them.
Good for them. Yes, exactly.
It just seems strange to me that, you know, I live over in this village and I learn how to talk like this. And then there's like, you know, a river or something that separates us. And then, you know, you live over in this other village and you learn a whole different way of communicating just because of that river in the way. I mean, it's very odd. So, but speaking of languages, though, the a lot more people nowadays are speaking Klingon. It's true. People
going from absolute zero to some.
People actually study Klingon and they speak
it. Well, I mean, why not? I mean, as Esperanto was a big phenomenon in the 20th century, the idea that maybe there could be a universal language which wasn't necessarily connected with any particular language. You know, we could all learn like another language.
Yeah.
Maybe Klingon will be that language, although, you know, all those glottal fricatives in there, I'm not sure how well that's going to go over.
My Klingon restaurant didn't do very well, though, down on State Street.
The Squirmy Worm restaurant? Everything's raw here, just to let you know. Oh, you know, I got excited. I saw in the paper, one of my favorite writers for the Wisconsin State Journal, Samara Kalk, Derby, said that there's a new bubble tea place opening. I don't know if I told you about this, but over the summer I got completely converted to bubble tea.
No, I
love
no idea.
Bubble tea. We were in, of all places, we were in Paris, and there was a colleague of companions who said, you know, I really love bubble tea. I was going to get some bubble tea. And I was like, I've never had bubble tea. And a bunch of other people who had it are like,
can't bubble
whatever.
Up.
But I was just like, I've never had it. And I think the name put me off. I had no idea what it even meant.
Right.
There are these little pellets of kind of gooey stuff in the bottom of what's like cold chai tea. So everybody except for me probably knows what it is already. But at any rate, I was just excited by that. The texture of it and the weirdness of it and stuff like that.
Is it like CO2 in it or something?
No, it's they're little wads of tapioca. It depends on the. It could be different things, taro, different stuff, and so it has this kind of consistency. It's like little pudding pellets inside of your tea. Is what it really basically is. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing. And of course, because it was Paris and everything's weird in Paris, they actually had a street with nothing but bubble tea shops. What is this, like some kind of fight to the death to see which one survives? Because this one place, apparently it was the popular one, there was a line halfway down the block, and then there were like three other bubble tea places, and there was not a single soul in there. And I was like, this seems cruel somehow. Couldn't we distribute these better?
Those were the spite shops. The customers that got ticked off at the first shop and decided to open their own.
But anyway, there's a bubble tea place here in town, and over on the west side.
All right. So let's go do a remote from
go
there.
Over there. And, yeah. Check it out.
Yeah.
Check it out. No, it's on the east side. Sorry, on the east side. Hey, federal officials this week expressed optimism that the nation is better prepared for another surge of COVID-19. In fact, they think that there's probably a reduced risk in the coming year. This is one of the last pronouncements of Anthony Fauci, you know, history's greatest monster. He said that the administration is hopeful that the combination of infections and vaccinations had created, quote, enough community protection that we're not going to see a repeat of what we saw last year at this time. So this is especially important, of course, because everyone's getting together for the holidays. People need to be vaccinated and boosted. So nothing I've seen in the subvariants. This is Dr. Ashish Jha, who's the White House COVID-19 coordinator. Nothing I've seen in this subvariants makes me believe that we can't manage our way through it effectively if people step up and get their vaccines. So vaccines and boosters, still a super, super important part of managing this disease.
I've mentioned this in past Thanksgivings, I think that last year at least, but the reason, this is a fun fact here, the reason that pumpkins are have become part of the fall, you know, symbol, you know, pumpkin pie and everything,
sure, yeah,
is that pumpkins were an abolitionist symbol because pumpkins were grown on small farms, and they weren't grown on plantations.
Right.
So the pumpkin became a symbol for the anti-slavery movement.
Interesting.
And so we've carried that through today.
I love it.
So when you got like pumpkins in your window, you know, jack-o'-lanterns or pumpkin pie at Thanksgiving,
very good.
It's a callback to the anti-slavery movement.
So. That idea of embargoing products that were products of slavery was a generalized phenomenon at that time. One of the most famous, there was a Quaker anti-slavery activist by the name of John Woolman. And the Quakers believed, they saw themselves as a plain people. They always dressed in drab colors, blacks and grays and so on. But that requires a lot of dye to make your clothes. You know, you take woolen clothing and you make it black, you got to put a lot of dye in there. And dye is made from indigo, and indigo was one of the major plantation crops of the South. So when Woolman, adopted his anti-slavery and advocated for his anti-slavery stance with his fellow Quakers, he refused to wear dyed clothes. He just wore plain undyed cotton, totally against. I mean, there he was with this kind of ugly off-white coat on, you know. But that was supposed to be like. That's the kind of thing that the heathens do, right? Because it's all like bright and weird looking like that. But he said, look, if you're serious about this, you will not wear dyed clothes because it comes from indigo, and this is a slave crop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's another fun fact. When Senator-elect,
we're full of them, aren't we?
When Senator-elect John Fetterman takes office, he will be one of 10 senators named John.
Wow.
Either J-O-H-N or J-O-N.
That's the
diversity of the U.S. Senate. It's probably about 8 named Robert.
Yeah, well, here you go.
I saw an ad online that there was it was for the Herschel Walker campaign.
Yeah.
And there was a bus tour, a campaign bus tour.
Sure.
With Herschel Walker.
Okay.
Lindsey Graham.
Oh, boy.
And Ted Cruz.
Wow. Where's the MyPillow guy?
Can you imagine the conversations in the back of that bus? You know?
Oh, man.
Cruz is looking up saying, well, it looks like a storm's coming. Does this bus go to Cancun? Lindsay's getting the vapors because the bus is going, you know, just
it's going 35
at a hellacious rate.
35.
And Herschel Walker's explaining how you can build a car out of cottage cheese.
Oh, yeah, right. And he'd rather be a werewolf than a vampire.
That's right. Yeah, who would?
That was one of his more stunning
speeches. I'd rather be a vampire. I wouldn't want. Werewolf's just too messy. You're ripping your clothes all the time.
I don't like any of those things.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you had to pick one, though, at least vampires are kind of cool and sexy. I miss the sun, but. But the werewolf, you're ripping your clothes.
Well, listen, I have trouble sleeping sometimes. So if I could get a good day's sleep, I'd probably be
I'd probably adjust to that, you know,
in my that
body
coffin,
clock.
You know, you're there the whole time.
But the werewolf, you got like chunks of meat in your teeth. You got to floss every day.
Yeah, werewolves are a little
just messy.
More out of it.
You're drinking out of the toilet and you know.
There was a skit they did on Saturday Night Live one time where I was James Wood played a vampire, and he is
a vampire.
He's gliding up with this gal, and he's saying, you know, good evening, sort of thing, and he's doing the whole vampire shtick. And but he was worried about getting AIDS, right? So he's asking questions,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so he's
How many partners?
He's only one. It's like, oh, that's great. And he gets a little bit closer, and he goes, well, tell me something about him. Well, he's a drummer.
Next.
Next.
Oh.
National surveys have found that Americans are turning to restaurants to supply Thanksgiving dinner this year. It's according to a Pop Menu November 2022 survey of 1,000 customers. Almost half said they were going to get their entire Thanksgiving meal or various dishes from restaurants.
Most of them said White Castle.
Yeah. I just shows you what I'm like. The minute you had that said that, I just had this image of like that Norman Rockwell table, and in the middle where the kids looking at the looking out of frame, and he's smiling, and they're all. I just had this image of like about 37 White Castles right on that big platter right in the middle of the table. That'd be great.
Pass the sliders, please.
Exactly.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org because we stream all of our programs. And also, you could be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page. And you can podcast thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, who does the file management. You can get this show through the pod systems of iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your pods.
I got a bunch of stories here of positive things, trying to come up with some positive things to share with the folks, things to be thankful for. I guess that's kind of hackneyed, but you know, sometimes you need that.
Okay. And a salute to one of our longtime friends from the local entertainer who's doing his last show today.
Oh, okay.
And we're back. I just got to tell you, I looked over at the phone console here.
Sure.
And there's a little message on there that says, you have 128 missed calls.
Wow. So,
in case someone was trying to call down here. Your call is important to us, but not that important.
We're a little understaffed today just because
it's essentially a holiday.
Yeah, it's a holiday.
So we don't have a receptionist, and I think a lot of the staff is gone. So.
Hey, in an iPhone factory in central China, thousands of workers are clashing with riot police. This is Guangzhou. It's the protesters broke out of lockdown buildings to confront health workers and ransacked food provisions. People are really unhappy there right now. The COVID rules that they have in their countries, it's the third year now, are so harsh. They're so rigid that it's creating some real anxiety and unhappiness for people there. This is, of course, along with this, you know, the president, Xi Jinping, just got elected to his third term of office, appointed by his own cronies. A little Elon Musk action going on there. But at any rate, he's into his third term, and people are not happy. Things are looking sort of unhappy there, and this is causing protests in China. So protests in China, that's a good thing, I think.
Well, you know what that factory was? That was a Foxconn factory.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
It was.
I know.
They brought out the police.
I'm laughing sardonically to
beat on the protesters.
Right.
And
yeah,
so
of course.
Scott Walker looks on longingly. Yeah. It's like, oh, we almost had that.
Jeez. Feds at their November meeting said that they're going to probably slow the increases in interest rates. Central bankers lifted interest rates by 0.75 percentage point for a fourth straight time, but they said that they're trying not to be as aggressive as in the past. Which, when you raise them too high, of course, you're in danger of creating a recession. So they're trying to find that sweet spot, and they're thinking right now maybe it's about the time to sort of pull back a little bit. Failing to curb inflation quickly could be bad, but trying to go too hog wild, of course, could make the economy go into a tailspin. So they're starting to talk about pulling back on the increases that they've been doing.
On sort of a related note, closer to home, the Republican leaders of the Wisconsin legislature said Tuesday They want to use the record budget surplus to enact transformational once-in-a-generation tax changes, including lowering tax rates for the state's wealthiest residents.
Oh, that's a surprise.
They're throwing around the idea of a flat tax.
Snore. I mean, of course they are. I mean, what is that? Like, do they need to announce it? I mean, I'm surprised that they even need to announce it.
I am breathing
it.
Today.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm a Republican. I want to destroy the concept of a public sector. Got it. So,
I want to do this before we forget. Just wanted to wish a fond retirement to one of the longtime friends of the show, the truly remarkable Loon.
Oh, yes.
Madison, just a Madison tradition, a Madison institution.
Yeah.
Or his the juggling Loon.
He is.
And
he did some radio juggling.
We did a live show one time at a little theater, and he came on and did juggling on the radio. He just juggled like a Buick Electra 88, and some flaming chainsaws.
Flaming chainsaws were the best. The audience sumo
wrestlers, and it was just amazing. Yeah, he didn't drop
Edgar Bergen.
He didn't drop a thing.
He's a ventriloquist on the radio.
I haven't seen him for quite a while, but the Loon was always a good friend of the show, good friend of the station.
He always wore purple satin pants.
He made purple, you know, before Prince even. He made purple his color.
Yeah,
so,
he did. It's true.
So I got a little musical tribute here to him.
Oh, okay.
Donnie and Marie doing their big hit, Deep Purple.
You know, I have a recording of that done by by Bing Crosby from 1947 on a 78, and it is like a million times better than that. Like, that is so bad. It's really comically bad. Purple Dream. What was going on in the 70s exactly? It was just, everybody was just too mellow.
Oh, the talking part. I didn't know there was a talking part. I didn't listen to that.
That's what we call the recitation.
I normally love it when they talk in songs, but it's usually like, you know, Isaac Hayes or you know, Curtis Mayfield or somebody.
Right,
and there's something good going on.
Porter Wagner.
So anyway, Truly Remarkable Loon is doing his last show today. Might it even be at this very moment. It
was
this afternoon sometime over at the Overture Center. So anyway,
excellent.
Congratulations on a great career.
Yes.
And our bud actually legally changed his name to Truly Remarkable Loon.
Wow.
So it's not a stage name. That's his real name.
So you call him Truly for short?
I guess. TRL, I don't know. They did a feature on him in Madison.com a little while ago, and they said that he's got he's purple. Everything he wears is purple.
Yes.
And he has a dedicated washing machine for just his purple stuff. I think that's probably his wife's idea.
Yeah. Wow, that's not a choice I'd make, but
purple or
I respect that
having a dedicated washing machine. I like purple. Purple's
no, the wife part.
Where's the bell?
I know you're going to be surprised at this. Cost cutting as Twitter means that bills are going unpaid. Mr. Musk, Elon Musk, Melon Husk, as I like to call him, and his advisors have trained their sites on computing costs that support Twitter's underlying infrastructure. Travel expenses, software services, real estate, and even the company's normally lavish in-office cafeteria. They've tried to save money everywhere, but they're not doing so good. So they've decided to basically stiff their vendors, some of whom are owed millions of dollars in back payment.
He's got my vote.
Yeah. The company took on a $13 billion in loans for his buyout of the social network. He closed the deal for $44 billion, as we all recall, and immediately slashed half of the company's 7,500-person workforce. And he was still firing people. And of course, putting people in positions where they basically decided to fire themselves.
Right.
Like, really? We're going to be doing that? No, don't think so.
Yeah. Well, they reactivated a lot of the banned accounts, like all the Nazis and stuff. I mean, he just did a blanket amnesty for all of the banned accounts. So, just the other day.
Well, I'm not happy unless I see the N-word at least 300 times a day. So, yeah, that's what apparently some people think.
Mentioned Ted Cruz earlier, and I have one more little bit about Ted Cruz. There's a big storm heading for Texas, a big winter storm that's going to like dump tons of snow on them and probably paralyze their electrical grid, as it tends to do down there.
Yeah, and because it's the best that capitalism, unrestricted capitalism, can buy. Elon should take over that too.
Right.
Run it just like a business into the ground.
So when that storm showed up on the weather forecast, all these people on Twitter were saying to Senator Ted Cruz, "Ted, the storm's coming. Do you have your bags packed yet?"
He's never going to live that down.
I know.
Well, they should have talked to his daughter. I mean, she was the one that caused all that.
I just remember there was a picture of, like, they went and took a picture of his house, like, a reporter, photographer. And sure. And there was his dog was, like, looking out the window of the window door.
Help me.
I know. Someone put me in the pound. Yeah.
They can smell fatuousness. They really can. It's one of the amazing dog abilities.
An estimated 6 million American adults carried a loaded handgun with them daily in 2019.
Oh, my Lord.
That's double the number who said they carried a gun every day in 2015, according to the American Journal of Public Health. And they suspect that it probably went up since 2019.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure it did. There's a story I saw in the online New York Times, which I assume is going to be in their Sunday edition, about a giant meta study that was done that tried to control for all the other factors in terms of culture and so on, and found that the reason why, and I know you'll be shocked by this, Mel, the reason why we have so many mass killings in the United States, no matter what the motivation or whatever, no matter what the mental state of the individual is, because we have more guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the number of guns that we have relative to any other nation is just completely ridiculously out of control. And the thing is, you have to just have a basic, I would say, healthy understanding of what people are like to realize that giving them the power to instantaneously kill others by moving their finger is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But we have it in, you know, multiples. Over other countries.
Right.
So you look at that and you're like, well, I guess it might actually be, you know, we can get places faster because we have fast transportation. We can, you know, we have great computing power. All of those are goal-oriented things that enable us to do that thing easier. Well, guess what? Guns do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They enable us to do something easier that maybe we shouldn't be allowed to do.
Well, and you can make a split-second decision that that you know you probably will regret the rest of your life.
Well,
you know,
except for those tens of thousands of people every year that don't regret it because they just killed themselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that too. So, this week on Facebook, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy...
Still minority.
...hopes to be the majority leader.
Yeah, call him a minority, though. He hates that.
He made a pledge. He said, next year, Republicans will start every day in Congress with prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. No exceptions.
Great.
Thing is, they do that now. That's actually a rule.
That's just...
They've done it forever.
Right. Yeah.
And...
That's just for the soundbite.
Just for the
and for the implication.
Right,
It's like smoke Luckies. It's toasted. They're all toasted. Anyone just had a shady oyster or mushrooms soup that didn't make you feel quite right? You know, you start feeling queasy pretty fast.
Sure.
But here's the reason why. This is a little bit. Remember the story I did a few weeks ago about like how coffee actually makes you use the bathroom? Is it doesn't actually reach your stomach. It basically stimulates your flight or fight response.
Oh, okay.
And so you immediately have to crap basically because that's what an animal does when it needs to run away. They just recently discovered this, and they're thinking, how can coffee make you have to crap? Because it takes a while to digest it. Well, it turns out that when you eat certain icky things, it's the same sort of process.
Oh, okay.
It's actually the bacteria will release toxins, and the brain itself gets a signal that there's something that you have to do to get rid of it. In this case, of course, throw up. But so this is there's a neural pathway that helps people basically create nausea in themselves when the toxins that are released trigger a mechanism in the brain that does this. So they did experiments with mice, and they showed that a bacterial toxin and a chemo medication both set in motion a similar cascade of messages. And so what they did was, just like what you always do in science, you always have a control. So you give them, you know, give them the icky mushroom, and then you give them this thing that replicates the properties of the icky mushroom. You do the same thing to them, and they're not eating it. They're being injected with just the toxin itself, and it immediately responds.
So
that
it's just
way.
Your brain. It's not your stomach.
It's your brain helping out. That brain's got to be good for something.
Well, that's what a lot of our reactions to things are. I mean, it's because we were conditioned or evolved that right. You know, this is poison. Stay away from this. Yeah, you'll get sick if you eat this. That's why you know, things smell bad to us.
I just wish mine wouldn't constantly, you know, remind me of my mother screaming at me or something. Like, okay, that template is over. Could you move on to something else? I think I learned a little too well here.
So Mercedes-Benz, it has some electric models. It's electric EQ models, they call it.
All right.
And if you can buy the car, you know, because you buy a car, you get a car, it's your car.
Sure.
And but with this car,
yes,
if you want it to accelerate faster,
okay,
you can subscribe to a $1,200 annual subscription where they will tweak the software so that your car will go faster as long as you subscribe.
So you're in the Iridium class or something, right? This whole freaking society is just collapsing in one medieval heap, isn't it?
You don't buy anything. You just lease everything.
You lease it. And basically, if you got a little bit more money than the next guy, then you get on the plane first.
Right.
Or you get, you know.
And if their system crashes or if they get out of the business of doing that, then you don't have it. It's like, you know, it's like the...
Hey, it's Jaguar.
Hi, Jaguar. It's like the streaming music, you know. It's like you can listen to it, and it's kind of yours, but it's not really. No. You know, it could go away tomorrow.
Yes.
You know?
So my biggest fear, you know exactly why I still buy DVDs and CDs, because I don't want some executive somewhere to say, hey, people are liking that too much. Let's make them beg for it, you know. No, I don't want to beg for it. Hey, I don't know if you were following this. I bet you were, Mel, because you like to follow these kinds of things. But the NASA's Orion spacecraft, zipped past the moon's far side on Monday, and it only passed 81 miles from the surface of the moon.
Oh, wow.
And the spacecraft has no humans on board.
That's like from here to Rockford, but not as socially disturbing.
It's been traveling toward the moon since last Wednesday, when it was launched as part of the Artemis 1 mission. And its journey, all told, is going to be going to last 20 days. So it passed by the moon. The closest pass was on Monday. And the capsule fired its engine for 2.5 minutes, and that accelerated its velocity, as it swung around into what is known as a distant retrograde orbit. So it's taken lots of pictures. The orbit is distant, 40,000 miles from the lunar surface, and it's retrograde. That means that the spacecraft is traveling around the moon in the direction opposite to the way that the moon travels around the Earth. And so that's going to be there, again, all told, 6 days. And during that time, it's providing a lot of interesting information to people back here on Earth. This is the farthest that any spacecraft designed to carry humans has ever been from the Earth. The previous record, and again, this is something you may know already, Mel, but I'll just share it with the listeners. The previous record occurred during Apollo 13 because they had to go around the moon to come back to Earth instead of entering orbit. So that was the farthest out that we've ever had anything like that go. Wow.
More astronomy news: that the moon Io, Jupiter's third largest moon, is really, really, really volcanic, and they're thinking that that underneath the crust of the planet there might be an ocean of magma.
Oh, cool!
Isn't that cool? It's like
EIEIO.
It's a super hot sea of melted rock, which would be unique in our solar system.
Our solar system, it's like there's moons that are just giant balls of ice with liquid water under, and there's moons that are giant balls of methane that are just methane seas and things like that. I mean, there's a lot to choose from out there. There's a real smorgasbord. Like
the planets are cool, but I mean, as far as real discovery stuff, I think the moons are where to go.
Yeah. So. I was thinking about this yesterday because many people say that... have said that Jupiter and Saturn are like they're like brown dwarfs. They're like suns that didn't ignite, right? It's unusual to have a single star system. Usually they're binary or trinary systems. So these could have ignited and didn't.
Oh, okay.
They kind of fizzled.
They're duds.
And so in a sense they've got like two kind of sort of mini solar systems inside of the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys have got a lot of those interesting moons, and it's the gravitational pressure that they're putting on that create the heat and the various other characteristics that enable them to seem attractive as places to go. Here's some good news. The governor of Alabama, Governor Kay Ivey, she issued a sweeping order on Monday suspending all the executions in the state.
Oh, cool.
And the reason why is because the method by which that they have been killing people is apparently, it looks very dubious. And prison officials had been unable to insert one of two intravenous lines into this one unfortunate who was killed earlier in the week. They tried to kill early in the week. And it was the third time this year in which Alabama executioners have failed to basically reach a death row prisoner's veins. And so they're putting this aside until they get to a better understanding of how it might work. But who knows? They're not killing anybody in Alabama officially right now. So that's a good thing.
Now, I don't know the methodology on this, but here's a list of the most regretted college majors.
Okay, all right.
Percentage of graduates who would pick a different major if they could.
All right.
Number one. Journalism. 87%.
Does that jive with your experience?
That's kind of my experience, yeah. No, I like my journalism degree. It taught me a lot. It taught me how to write and how to do critical thinking. And, skills.
It was a big thing at one time, too. I mean, in the 70s, everybody was a journalism major.
Yeah, sure.
It was just like, I mean, you had all these great examples of why it was important to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember this friend from a lot of my classes, and I went to see All the President's Men, and we were all really into that.
Yeah,
the best date ever.
So what are some of the other ones? Journalism is number one.
Sociology was number two, 72%.
Yeah.
Just general liberal arts, general studies, 72%. Communications.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Kind of a double whammy for one of us.
Yeah, right.
64%.
I think that those, I don't know as much about journalism, but communications definitely. People think that that will make you job ready, and it requires more than just that, obviously.
I mean,
it sounds like it's a guaranteed, you know, you'll get a job doing that, but people can be disappointed on that one.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, again, a lot of those skills I learned in there were very transferable.
Oh, yeah, sure,
so,
of course.
I did journalism for a while, but then I did a bunch of other crap that was kind of related and just and I just, but also just in like jobs that really weren't related to it, I used a lot of those skills. I mean,
so. You just like to hypnotize people with your words.
I do. I do.
You can do that in a lot of jobs.
I did have some of my staff people when I'd send out emails saying, are you like a writer type person or something? Kind of. But let's see. Marketing, 60%.
Wow. Because
that's like not a thing.
Oh my God.
It's just fantasy. Medical, clinical assisting, 58%. But that's probably more like a burnout thing.
Yeah,
where it's really a difficult
that
job.
That makes sense.
Political science, government. That's my minor. I got the trifecta here. One of my minors.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's
I got you pegged.
That's 56%. Biology, 52%.
Oh, that surprises me.
And then English language and literature, 52%. So. Yeah. Probably kind of about what you would expect.
That generalized liberal arts thing amuses me. When I was at the University of Kentucky, we had a degree called the Bachelor of General Studies.
Yeah.
And it was for people that didn't know what to do with their credits.
Right.
We called
it
the Bluegrass Special. Oh, yeah. He's studying for his Bluegrass Special. I note with interest they don't
best
have
7 years of my life.
They don't have my major on there. I think that one of the things
I thought yours would pop up there.
No, it doesn't. And I'll tell you why I bet it doesn't. Is because people that get into certain kinds of majors, mine was philosophy, they already know what they're getting into. I really do feel those first few, there's a mismatch between what you're promised and what you sometimes end up doing.
Right.
With philosophy, I was just happy I wasn't working at the lunch counter somewhere, you know. I mean, I knew that I was making what could be a foolish choice.
Yeah, yours was a sit-down restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, it all worked out in the end. In fact, I remember one of my professors when I was an undergraduate said, don't think that someday you're going to be in a nice office somewhere wearing a tweed jacket. You know, you could be doing all kinds of stuff.
That's exactly what you're doing.
And that's exactly what ended up happening, yes.
Yeah. We got about a minute left here. You want anything real quick you want to get in?
Scientists around the world are voted to retire the leap second. So no more leap seconds.
Oh, no more leap second. Okay.
Yep. The time has come. 2035 will be the last leap second we have. This is according to an international treaty body that among scientists and measurement experts. They met at Versailles this last week, and the unanimous vote, almost unanimous, was known as Resolution D, and it was met with relief and jubilation T. Cornpone from the world's meteorologist. Thank God, they said.
All right, very good. So, all right, time to declare the weekend. It's the weekend in my neighborhood where all the cars come from Madison and strap Christmas trees to their roof. And so it's because I live right by a Christmas tree farm. And
very nice.
So I see a lot of Subarus with Christmas trees on top of them. So. All right, stick around. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar. Then Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday on My Mind. All kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. Pants, great to see you. Have a good weekend.
Too,
we'll see you next Friday. It's 2 o'clock. You are listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.